call the segments Wisconsin Life, and they've really taken on a life of their own. These segments bring us in touch with the state's culture, its history, and the people who call Wisconsin home. The creative force behind Wisconsin Life is leaving Wisconsin Public Radio, and we thought this would be an excellent time to take stock of some of the more remarkable moments and hear again a handful of so many people we've been introduced to through the years. Erica Janik is the outgoing executive producer of Wisconsin Life. She's the author of 6 books, including A Short History of Wisconsin and Odd Wisconsin, both published by Wisconsin Historical Society Press. Erica, thanks so much for coming by.
Thanks so much for having me.
So let's go back and first figure out, how did Wisconsin Life get started? What was the impetus?
So it was actually an idea that Anne Strainchamps had. She had been visiting her family out on the East
Coast. The
host
of...
To the best of our knowledge. Yeah, so she had been out visiting family, and she heard out on Cape Cod these little 20-second snippets that were playing. And it was just things like a woman hanging her laundry and explaining the right way to do it. And she was like, why don't we have something like this? And so she started thinking about what it would be, how that could play out on Wisconsin Public Radio. And she and I had gotten to know each other, and we started talking a lot about it. I had worked at the Wisconsin Historical Society, so I knew a lot about Wisconsin. And so when we got started in 2011, it just seemed like just this great way to get stories and voices that you don't normally hear on the radio, on the radio.
Has it evolved? Has it changed at all?
It absolutely has changed. So when we started in 2011, I mean, really, we were just trying to figure out what in the world we were doing and how we wanted to do it. And so I think it's kind of been a refinement of the concept and figuring out how it was actually going to work out. A lot of things have stayed the same, though. I mean, we do written pieces. People write personal essays and stories, and they come in and read those. We also go out in the field and interview people, or sometimes people come in here and we interview them and talk about whatever it is that they're excited about and passionate about. Another major way the project has changed is that in 2013, Wisconsin Public Television actually decided that they wanted to do Wisconsin Life too, and so we became a collaborative effort between the two stations, and now there's a Wisconsin Life television show. We also have a online presence where there's some online-only stories and a lot of crossover between the two audio and video platforms.
So along this journey, what's been the goal? What's been your mission when you go about figuring out what to put in Wisconsin Life?
So my kind of underlying mission, besides, what's written on our website that we're, exploring what it means to live in Wisconsin or be from Wisconsin, is that...
Because that can mean anything.
Absolutely. And in some ways, that's exactly what Wisconsin Life is. It can mean anything. The umbrella is very wide. But really, for me, the things I think about are, I want you to hear someone who sounds like someone that you know, and I want you to hear someone that you didn't know lived in Wisconsin. And because I think that there's a lot of diversity around the state, socioeconomic, rural, urban, and we really want to reflect that. Age, the oldest person who's been on was 92. The youngest person so far was 7. So, we're really trying to get a broad age range, a broad range of experience, a broad range of life experience.
Well, let's go behind the scenes and discuss how a Wisconsin Life feature is created from the beginning to the end. How would you describe this progression and kind of lift the veil, if you will?
Sure. So if we're doing something that's a written story, for example, those come in kind of a variety of ways. I will often seek people out. I'm constantly reading magazines and newspapers and looking at books that are coming out, or I love to look at community newspapers and newsletters.
Ah.
I found some actually great people. One of my favorites is The Voice of the River Valley, which you can pick up in Spring Green, and every time I'm out there, I pick it up and I find something great and I contact those people. But people also send things in. And so the process for that is that we'll go back and forth figuring out how to tell this story on the radio, because writing for the ear is not the same as writing for the eye. You know, there's things like the sentences need to be a lot shorter. and it's surprising that a 3-minute radio story is 500 words. I get a lot of people that send in 2,000 word stories, so we do a lot of cutting. yeah, it can be really difficult sometimes, but, you know, I think because I'm a writer too, I really can identify with the people that are doing it. I understand how hard it is. And so,
and you've been such a mentor to them because you've held writing workshops and really helped people evolve from print or writing, you know, a book or you know, creatively to broadcast.
Absolutely. You know, we get people that are, you know, New York Times bestselling writers that write for Wisconsin Life, like Nicholas Butler, for example. But Nick isn't a radio writer. And so we have to go back and forth to figure out how we're going to tell this story on the radio. And yeah, I've definitely done workshops with high school students, college students, adults, basically anyone who's interested. I would have come and talked to you about how to write for the radio and how to be on Wisconsin Life, because I really want as many stories and as many people to feel a part of it as possible. And so, you know, once we get the stories in, once we go through that process, then people come into the studio here in Madison or to one of our bureaus or wherever I can find a studio near you. Some of the people that contribute to the series don't live in Wisconsin anymore. So they might live in Minneapolis or Los Angeles or New York. And so I find a studio there for them. And then we coach them on how to read their story so it sounds like they're telling you a story rather than reading you a story. It's been very funny to me. I mean, I do it too, so I completely understand. Is everyone has this kind of reading voice that they have. And I don't know where we learned the reading voice, but the reading voice is not the voice we want to use on the radio. And so, yeah, I'm like, it's very amusing just to see, like, you have a conversation with someone and then they get in front of the microphone with their written thing and suddenly their tone changes completely. And so we try to break them and try to make it sound like them. And then once we get that, that can be 20 takes of a story. And then we piece it together and mix it for broadcast.
We're talking right now with Erica Janik. She is the longtime executive producer of Wisconsin Life, a series you find on Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television. Now 6 years in the running, she's author of 6 books, including A Short History of Wisconsin and Odd Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you enjoy about Wisconsin Life features? Erica, I'm wondering, you must have a really huge Rolodex. I mean, how many people have contributed over the years?
Oh my gosh. Who even knows? Okay. Probably, I mean.
You're so organized. I thought you would have like this meticulous number.
It'd be great if I could just throw that number right out at you, right? We have 47 people that have contributed more than one story. I consider those our regulars. But, you know, we've done about 900 stories. So I would say probably 700 individual people have done stories. I do have them all noted. I just didn't pay attention to how many of the number, but, you know, we're trying to get everybody, you know, and I hope that that's the end goal, is we want everybody. So I'm working on it.
And I know too that for any journalist, you have those favorites, you have those gems. Are there particular types of stories that when you get it, you're just like, you know what, this is it. I love this. I can't wait to get this on the air.
Oh, so many of them. I feel like my personality is such that I basically want to be the person I'm talking to within 2 minutes of talking to them. But, you know, I think the ones that are the best for me are the ones that are really surprising. You know, I might think it's interesting going into it. Like, the one that immediately comes to mind is Gary Brockman. He's a button collector. And, you know, someone said, you should do a story on button collecting. And I was like, sure, I should. Great. That sounds interesting. It was amazing.
What kind of buttons?
All kinds. Centuries worth of buttons he brought in. He had buttons from the French Revolution, and he was telling me about the political history of buttons and how you could tell world history through buttons. And an interview that I thought was only going to be maybe you know, 30 minutes ended up being 90 minutes because I couldn't get enough. And he was so fascinating.
And then you have to cut that down.
Yes, to 3 minutes.
Such is the story.
Absolutely. But those are some of my favorite types of stories where I really don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, I think it sounds like it would be interesting, but
we're reflecting on the years of Wisconsin Life, the segments heard here on Wisconsin Public Radio and the Ideas Network that showcase the unique and diverse stories of our state. Wisconsin Life executive producer Erica Janik is our guide. Let's hear from you. What Wisconsin Life segment has stuck with you? Were you part of the production at some point? What was it like telling your story? 800-642-1234. Also, what untold stories would you like to unearth in your community? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. We'll return after a news update. Wisconsin Life producers go all around the state in search of new voices, hidden talents, unique experiences that give a fuller picture of who calls Wisconsin home. The segments are part of both Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television. It's Wisconsin Weekend here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're going back through the years to reflect on the memorable moments of Wisconsin Life with its executive producer as our guide. Erica Janik is with us. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you enjoy the Wisconsin Life features? And if so, what do you appreciate about them? What do you hear, want to hear more of? What untold story is in your neighborhood? 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Erica, before we went to the news, you teased us with the button guy.
Oh, he's so great.
So could you lead into a little clip of Mr. Button Guy?
Yeah, so this is Gary Brockman. He had a completely different career before he got into buttons and just basically reset his whole life to become a button collector and a button dealer. And he had centuries worth of buttons, and it was fascinating. And he was saying basically how you can tell human history in like the development of buttons and what's printed on them. And so he brought hundreds of buttons into the studio, and we spent an hour and a half looking at them, and he talked about what buttons have meant to him and why they matter.
And where does he call home?
Middleton.
So let's hear a little bit.
I think buttons matter in the way that any material from any culture at any point in history matters. They're windows into our past. You know, there's that really tired old saying, those who forget their history are condemned to repeat it. And this is just one more avenue into human history, into cultural history, into technological history.
So that was Gary. He's talking about why buttons matter at the end of that story. And, you know, I think one of the things that was just so wonderful about it is, you know, I think I don't currently have any buttons on my clothes. I was just looking down. But, you know, almost every day I have a button on, and it's definitely made me think differently about it. And that's one of the wonderful things about being a part of this program, as so many things, I've met someone who has completely changed the way I think about something in my daily life, or I just remember what they said about it or why it matters to them. And that's really just been a wonderful thing and really enriched my experience of living in and being a part of Wisconsin.
Let's go to the phones with Lou, who joins us from De Pere. Hi, Lou.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I enjoy the segments of Wisconsin Life. I always try to listen to them when I know they're coming up. And my question is, oftentimes there's music in the background, different types. Sometimes it's framed by some beautiful 12-string guitar or something. And I just wondered, what is the origin of your background music? And I know that you're associated with the Wisconsin Arts Council, or maybe it's some of those people are playing it. I'm just curious about that.
Yeah, so finding music is actually one of the most fun and most difficult parts of putting together a story. I think we get music from a variety of sources. We actually try to use Wisconsin artists when we can, but we definitely have an idea of what works in Wisconsin life, which is generally kind of an acoustic sound. Usually drums are too loud. I like drums, but they don't necessarily work in our pieces. We don't usually have any kind of singing in the song because that can really distract from the person who's talking. It's really kind of a difficult art of trying to figure out what kind of music will complement the piece but not distract from the person trying to tell their story. We really just want to provide some kind of transition. That's how we see the music, a complement to it. But if the music becomes the primary thing that you remember about the story, unless you're someone who really keys in on that, and I get that too. I'm the person who walks around the grocery store and all I can hear is the music playing. So I get that. But, we really want the music to not be manipulative, but something that just really complements the feeling of the story and complements the person telling that story.
Well, Lou, thank you so much for calling in with that question. One thing we also enjoy, are the musical topics. For example, there was this feature where a female vocal quartet formed by college friends in Sheboygan. Tell us about that one.
So this is actually a group that probably most of our listeners have at least heard of some of their songs. They are called the Chordettes. And one of their songs that's very famous is Mr. Sandman. One of our regulars actually did this story, Dean Robbins. He's always up for a musical history or Abraham Lincoln type story.
Whatever works.
Yeah, he loves Lincoln. So he's done several Lincoln type stories. And he also has done a whole range of stories that kind of celebrate the musical heritage of Wisconsin. And I just really loved learning about the Chordettes. And I couldn't get enough of looking at pictures of them in their matching dresses. And I was just really excited. It was just yet another thing of like, I did not know. I have known that song my whole life, and I did not know that they were from Wisconsin.
Let's take a listen.
Then came their first bid for pop immortality, 1954's Mr. Sandman.
Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream.
This 2-minute gem stayed at number one for 7 weeks, and it's easy to see why. Nothing better represents the wholesome side of the 1950s. With sweet barbershop harmonies, the Chordettes pine for a cute guy to call their own. They want him to have wavy hair, and they think it would be peachy to meet him right away. Yes, they actually use the word peachy.
Oh my goodness.
I know, it's so peachy, isn't it?
There are no words.
We had so much fun putting that together and listening to the Chordettes. And like I said, looking at the pictures of them, it's just a different time period and a different era in both dressing and singing. And I just love it.
singing quartets, it doesn't end, though. In Sheboygan, you also spoke with the teen quadruplets from Waukesha, known as the Vintage Mix Quartet. And let's take a listen there.
Just growing up when listening to this, we learned things like back in the 40s was when the war was going on, and people really turned to the music as a way to escape all of that. So it's all upbeat music. We really enjoy all the artists who perform in that era, and we really enjoy that music.
We really hope our audience enjoys the songs that we sing, and because we love to perform at retirement homes, we really hope we're able to bring that music back for them, and we hope they enjoy it as much as we enjoy singing those songs.
So who are these four?
This was a family of quadruplets. I talked to them when they were 15. This was about 2 years ago. It was funny. I talked to them at the end of the school year because that was the only time we could do the interview. I asked them what their plans were for the summer. And they said that they were performing in all of these barbershop contests and competitions, but also hoping to get their learner's permits. And they were just adorable talking to all of them they were in Milwaukee when we talked, and just how they got interested in it and what they loved. And that's them singing in the background of that piece they performed for us in the studio. I mean, that's one of the wonderful things about doing Wisconsin Life, too, is I often get these basically private concerts of people that just come in and perform and, you know, show me their talent. And these kids were so fun and so funny, just listening to their banter between the four of them. And I know they're still performing. They're still out there. They've been doing really well. Yeah, it was just a real pleasure to get to know them.
Can we still find barbershop quartets today in Wisconsin?
Absolutely, you can. Besides Vintage Mix, there are several other barbershop quartets around the state. It's actually a pretty big thing still. One of the things that they were telling me about was the Dapper Dans, who are in Disney World, I believe. And they have a big barbershop group, and so, or like a big competition, and people come from all over the country and all over the world to perform. And so barbershop is still out there. It's not as popular as it was in the past, but people are still doing it. People are still excited about it. Teenagers in Wisconsin are still excited about it. And that is exciting to me.
Talking with Erica Janik, she is executive producer of Wisconsin Life. We're reflecting back on the Wisconsin Life segments and hearing clips of them. You can join the conversation, 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about Wisconsin Life? What segments have stuck with you? And what more do you want to hear from your own community or a particular talent you know of someone in your neighborhood? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Dan, who joins us from Drummond. Hi, Dan. Go ahead.
Well, in my hometown of Mellon, back in the 50s, we had a lady that had a restaurant, and she used to open up extremely early. Didn't know, no matter what time of season it was. Well, this one Sunday morning, a bus pulls up, and the bus driver goes in asking about coffee and that. And the surprise is that the people that got out of the bus were the Mills brothers, who had played the night before in Ironwood, Wisconsin, Ironwood, Michigan. And not only did they spend all afternoon there, but the owner's brothers came down and did barbershop quartet with them. And it was one of the best times that my hometown of Mellon ever saw.
That sounds amazing. Were you there?
I wish I was, but we lived out in the country at the time.
Huh. Oh, wow. So, Dan, what stories do you love to hear?
Well, I think that you did one on Bayfield Poker Club.
Uh-huh.
Didn't you?
We did, yes. That was in our very first year. 2011. I only vaguely recall it.
Well, now, this is something that you can think about. What Drummond does for the wintertime, they have a snowmobile club. And on the President's Weekend in February, they hold what they call their bar stool races. And basically what that is a bar stool on skis, and you go down a hill without any kind of steering.
We have actually done a Wisconsin Life story on this. I had seen it, I believe, on the tourism website, and I was like, what?
Did you try it?
I did not try it. One of our reporters, Danny Kading, actually did the story. I don't think she tried it either. I'll put it on my bucket list.
Dan, thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate it. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Erica, as you mentioned, the process of bringing these features to life, some of these stories do actually require that you not only go out in the field, but actively participate in the subject, such as like making a piece of art with Stick Vega, who makes art using gunpowder and fuses. Can you introduce us to this piece?
Yeah, so Stick Vega, he is an artist. He lives in Monona, and he had started painting, and then for whatever reason, he learned, I remember now, he was on a business trip. I was like, how did he get into this? He was on a business trip and he saw a Chinese artist who used gunpowder as a medium. And he thought, I should try that. And so now he's totally turned his whole artistic output into setting fuses and using gunpowder. So I went and saw his whole process, and we made a flower in his backyard and blew it up. We set all of the fuses and lit it, and he sprinkled the gunpowder on and told me all about the different types of gunpowder. It was fascinating. I kept my distance as well because it was I didn't really know what was going to happen.
And then there was your equipment.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Everything seemed to be okay. He's done this a lot of times. But still, it was very exciting. And definitely, again, you know, I went there thinking I'm going to learn about his work, but I didn't actually expect us to blow things up in the backyard.
This is the moment of pure art. As that fuse begins to burn towards its artistic destination, there is a uncertainty. You don't know what's going to happen, and so there's this anticipation as the fuse burns its way towards the board. Little did I know at that point, there are hundreds of types of fuses, and they burn at all sorts of different speeds. Light the fuse, and it was a fuse that burned 20 feet per second. It went very quickly to the panel, and kaboom.
So you do even blow things up on Wisconsin Life.
Oh, absolutely. And in that little clip there, he's talking about the very first time he did something and he was not really aware that, like he says in the clip there, that fuses, some of them burn faster than others. And so he happened to pick one that was really fast. And so he couldn't even get far enough back. So fortunately, when I was there, he's learned a lot about fuses by this time. So we had one that burned actually quite slowly headed towards it. But it was still very exciting as the whole thing kind of went up into a little kind of mini mushroom cloud on this plastic table in his backyard.
So have there been other strange or perhaps a little bit scary or unnerving things that you've done through the features for Wisconsin Life?
Yeah, there's been a few things I've done. I actually went to visit a casket maker in Beaver Dam, which was actually fascinating. They use a lot of Wisconsin products, Wisconsin wood, Wisconsin carpenters to put them together, but they're also in an old funeral home. And so in order to go downstairs so I could meet the finishers of the caskets and the seamstress who makes all of the lining for the caskets, we had to go inside their hand-cranked casket elevator. So we got in there together and he was like pulling the, and it was creaking as we went down, but it was still kind of cool. And then we got off in the former embalming room, which
is the former
embalming room. But, you know, again, it's like these, I never quite know what's going to happen. I have to say at that point, I had never actually been inside of a funeral home or a casket showroom before. So it was an enlightening afternoon.
So you didn't, did you know what story would come out of it?
Not completely. I had an idea that, you know, I wanted to tell a story of how this family ended up getting into this business and why it was important to do locally sourced. But other than that, I didn't really know what was going to happen.
What was the end result? What did you, what came out of it?
I learned a lot about what death means to him and how his feelings about death and dying have really changed through running this business. You know, he got into the casket business after building a casket for his grandfather with his family. And he really realized that that was time spent with the dead and the dying that we don't often get to do anymore. That in the past, death was something that, you know, you kind of had more experience with, and he really thinks that that's a really valuable experience, a real time to say goodbye, a real time to be with your loved one as they're passing on. And so that was kind of the story that we ended up telling, of a little bit about the actual business itself, but really about this experience in his own life and how it changed his perception of death and dying and what burials can actually be.
It's Wisconsin Weekend. We are revisiting highlights from Wisconsin Life, a series of segments that was founded here at WPR 6 years ago by Erica Janik and her colleague Ann Strainchamps, who is the host of To the Best of Our Knowledge. Erica Janik is the outgoing executive producer of Wisconsin Life, and she has curated a journey through the hundreds of voices she's encountered. We'll be back. It's the last Friday of 2017, and it's Wisconsin Weekend here on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We are on a sound journey this hour, listening to the voices that we've discovered through the Wisconsin Life production that airs on WPR and Wisconsin Public Television. Executive producer Erica Janik stays with us for this look back on the people she's encountered here in Wisconsin and the meaning she's found from her work in storytelling. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What Wisconsin Life segments have resonated with you? What communities, what person or people could Wisconsin Life explore in your neck of the woods? Join in this conversation about the many unique voices that make up Wisconsin. 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Eugene in Viola. Hi, Eugene.
Good morning. I got into this accidentally. In 1954, my mother and my stepfather bought a restaurant in here in Viola. And I bought the shoeshine stands from the barber shop. I used it one summer, let it sit in my mother's restaurant, and sat there for about 10 years. That time I had gone away to school, spent time in the service, and I bought an old Victorian here in the village. About a dozen rooms in the old place, nobody wanted it. Put it up in one of the bedrooms, sat there for 35 years. And about 20 years ago, somebody mentioned the Wild West days of Brookwood. I thought, oh, why not? By that time I was done teaching anyways. So I went out and sat up and used and charged a couple bucks for a shoe shine, and I just had a lot of fun. And I built it up to the point where I was doing about a dozen events in parts of three states. But I've also done special events, and I've also done fundraisers with it a couple of times around. But it's just interesting from the point that you never know who you're going to get up on that stand, and you never know what kind of a story they're going to have to tell you. It's just the people that you meet. In the process of a season. I start my season sometime about the last week in April, and the last one I do is in La Crosse, the first week in October. So I'm all done for the season.
And Eugene, is there an artfulness to shoe shining?
Yes, there is. I use a good polish, and I'll name it. It's an Angelus out of Los Angeles, California. Angelus brothers came to this country about 1904. Started polishing shoes and making their own polish, and they give me a good discount on the polish. But first you got to clean your shoes, and I use a toothbrush to put my polish on with. Unless it's a smooth shoe, a business, then I use a cloth, pretty much. But if you take, you can buy shoes at a secondhand store or a rummage store, and if you take care of them, they'll last you a long time. And when you polish them, put the polish in along the threads on the sides with that toothbrush. And just do that. And you don't necessarily have to use polish. You can even use axle grease if you want to. But keep those threads and everything sealed.
Well, Eugene, thank you so much for your story and for calling in.
Yeah, I love stories like that. I love knowing just about, you know, I've seen shoe shines for years. I've personally never been to one. But I love knowing about how you do it and the art of it. And these are the types of stories that I just love hearing about and that we try to cover on Wisconsin Life, though we haven't done a shoe shine, so I'll add that to the list.
Literacy is one of the themes Wisconsin Life has explored. In fact, the story of Ruth and Bonnie is one that you consider to be very eye-opening. Can we take a listen to that?
Absolutely.
I think Ruth was working towards her GED. Initially, that's what brought her to those services. And we've been together since that time.
We read every Wednesday.
Every Wednesday for about an hour.
Sometimes she will help me go over words and solving it out. Because I do have some big words right now that I got a book I'm reading.
But she does really well. We're working on breaking them apart, sounding them out. Ruth is not a child, so I'm not going to teach Ruth like a child.
So that was Ruth and Bonnie. Bonnie is Ruth's tutor, and I met them while I was exploring literacy in Wisconsin. I was kind of traveling around the state and talking to adults who, for a variety of reasons, have literacy problems. And Ruth is in her 60s. She had only recently moved to Oshkosh, and Bonnie had just retired a couple months earlier, and she just was looking for a volunteer opportunity. And so she started volunteering for her local literacy organization. And the relationship between the two of them was just amazing. It was really fun to talk to the two of them together. And Ruth is hoping to get her GED, and Bonnie's trying to get her there. And, you know, Ruth talked about how she's never really, she told me a lot of really hard things about her life, and how she's never really had someone that looked out for her and cared for her the way that Bonnie and her husband have. Just the love between them that has developed while also this kind of teaching relationship was really powerful. And this whole series, I talked to refugees, I talked to immigrants, I talked to a woman who actually could read, but she lacked some computer literacy. And so that's actually a skill that a lot of literacy councils are teaching. And just the bravery of these people that are seeking help. A lot of them had never told even their spouses that they couldn't read, and that they were even willing to talk to me, a stranger, and tell their story was, it just really meant a lot to me. And I just feel honored that they were willing to share their story and something that was so difficult and painful. But I'm also just, it's just so amazing that, you know, in their 60s, in their 50s, they're doing this. They want to do it. And there's that there are these amazing literacy organizations around the state, often staffed by volunteers, that are doing all of this really important work.
And a story that otherwise may not ever be told.
Absolutely. It's called like this, the silent epidemic, because it's something like 1 in 7 adults in Wisconsin lack basic literacy. And that's a huge number. And I feel like you just never hear about this. So it was, I learned so much and met so many amazing people and just got to go to these different organizations in Milwaukee and Madison and Oshkosh, a few other places, and just saw like the work that people are doing in church basements in a little room in a library. I talked to Ruth and Bonnie in this tiny room in the library. You can actually hear my microphone a little bit in there because it was a very awkward space. I was like reaching across them because we were basically sitting in a closet. And that's the room that they use for their lessons.
Erica, you're a historian. So much history that's deeply embedded here in the state and in the series. And you chose to explore monumental events such as Wisconsin in World War I. Can we go take a listen there?
Absolutely.
All our guns were moved up by animal, by horses. When the horses and the guns were moved up sometimes very fast, and we would be in the area where when we would get shelled, they would drop shells which were filled with gas. And we would then hear the klaxon horn go, ooh, 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 whereby it meant that you put your gas mask on. Well, the boys that were taking care of the artillery, the horses, their job was to put the gas mask on the horse first before they put their own mask on themselves.
I can't even imagine. I've seen actually pictures of a horse wearing a gas mask, but still, it's hard to any of this. So that's actually the voice of John Pavlik. He is a Wisconsin man who was in World War I. One of the wonderful things that I've been so excited about with this series is that we've been actually able to tap into the oral history collections at the Wisconsin Veterans Museum. And so this was recorded, I believe, in the 1970s. He's not still alive. But it's just wonderful to actually hear the voice of a real person who was in World War I. And I think that it really helps bring that war to life and make it seem more real and relatable. It is the 100th anniversary, kind of this period of time. So that's why we've been doing it, exploring Wisconsin's role in World War I. And so we've been telling stories of Wisconsin men and women, both at the battlefront as well as on the home front, using as many oral histories as we can. And if we don't have them, then we're taking diary entries, letters, and having people read them. We've had World War I has also been called the Poet's War. And there's very famous poems that came out of World War I. But there's also some people just in Wisconsin who wrote some poems. And so we've been sharing some of those as well. And it's just been really great. I feel like, you know, I love history. And but I still feel like World War I is one of those things that kind of got skipped over or real fast in school. We didn't really spend a lot of time on it. But, you know, it's one of the, if not the most significant event of the 20th century. And I think it's really important to remember it and to, you know, talk about that Wisconsin was a part of it, that our people were there. And so we're trying to cover it from all different angles. And it's been a really interesting and fascinating thing to uncover.
Erica, we have time to squeeze in just one more clip, your choice. What do you want us to hear as the takeaway here, just to squeeze it in?
Well, I think that we should do, as someone who is not from Wisconsin originally, that would be me here. We had a really fun story from writer Benjamin Percy. It's called State in Law, and it's all about how his girlfriend, now wife, was trying to convince him that Wisconsin was the place to be.
Iowans look elsewhere for something to root for, whereas Wisconsinites are proud. So proud that a stranger once high-fived me in the frozen pizza aisle for wearing a Packers sweatshirt. For me, this captures the spirit of the state. Wisconsin is proud. There is so much to high-five about. Beer, bratwurst, polka, snowmobiling, cabins, fishing. In Iowa, there is nothing to high-five about.
I mean, it's not only the lines, it's also Ben's voice.
Yeah.
That is actually his speaking voice. He is not doing any kind of... It's very surprising when you first hear it. But it's just a really fun story. No offense to anyone in Iowa. But, you know, just about how many wonderful things there are about Wisconsin. And one of the reasons I love that story is something that I've just really experienced myself moving to Wisconsin is people here love Wisconsin, and it's palpable and it's amazing.
Erica, thank you so much for spending time with us, and best of luck on your new adventure.
Thank you so much.
Erica Janik is the outgoing executive producer of Wisconsin Life. She is the author of 6 books, including A Short History of Wisconsin and Odd Wisconsin, both published by Wisconsin Historical Society Press. This hour of the morning show was produced by Nyasia Ellison. Michelle Good is our board operator this morning. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you hear Wisconsin Weekend and Wisconsin Life on the Ideas Network. Stay with us.